Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
The Pure Hoops podcast is a presentation of Pure Hoops Media. The Pure Hoops podcast most definitely does reflect the views of our management. Here's three-time NBA champ BJ Armstrong and Eric Newman.
So we're going to try something new today, being that this is a holiday, you know, it's not some crazy holiday special, but it's holiday week. We're doing this a day earlier as it's Wednesday, December 23rd. The season opened last night, and BJ and I were just in a little pre-show conversation about the Celtics, who, of course, I root for, and what's ahead for them this season versus where they left off in the conference finals. We're going to get into this when the Celtics come up on the on the rundown today, BJ. But it's good to have the season back, buddy. Before I ask you a couple of specific questions, what was memorable for you from opening night?
Memorable
or stood out? I'm not talking like scrapbook of memories, but you know what stood out either game.
The first thing that stood out to me, especially in game one, was how non-competitive the Warriors were in their first game of the season.
Shocking.
I was shocked. I'm really concerned about the Golden State Warriors. Not because they lost the game, but it's how they lost the game. They weren't very competitive. And I'm sure that's a concern to Coach Kerr and his staff, because that team, on paper, is better. But then I must remind myself they have Wiseman, who is a rookie.
Mm-hmm.
They have Oubre, who is a new player into a new system. You have Steph Curry taking on new challenges and basically will have to become a new player this year. They were missing Draymond Green.
Big part of their intensity. Overall, big part of their motor. Yep.
Yes. But overall, I was very concerned about the mental health of this team in the way they performed last night, because they need confidence to get back on the winning side of things so that they can come to the game with expecting to win. I think most of us are expecting this team at the very least to get to the playoffs. That was not a good showing last night, and it wasn't an indication of the depth of their team and who they could be. I know they're expecting big things from Mitchell Wiggins.
Andrew Wiggins, Mitchell the father.
Andrew,
of course,
sorry. Andrew, yeah. Rockets. Andrew Wiggins. I know they were expecting big things from him this year. And it just wasn't a very good showing in one game, in the first game. So I'm not going to make too big of a deal of it, but I am very concerned, because when you lose by 30 and you lose by a significant margin, because they were down for the most part of the game by a huge margin, I'm very concerned about
the game was over early. Yep.
The health and mental makeup of that team. And if this continues to be a trend, I'm not sure what that means for the Warriors and the run that they've had over the last 5 or 6 years. So I have some concerns, but I'm not going to make too big of a deal of it. But I think the Christmas Day game versus the Milwaukee Bucks is a bounce back game for them in many regards. They have to show that they can be competitive. They have to be competitive this year because this could really spiral and spiral very quickly for the Golden State Warriors moving forward if they're not able to go out there and compete on a nightly basis.
Two questions. One, how much do you think the absence of Draymond Green had to do with them feeling so flat opening night? Two, knowing you have some new parts and you've got, you had a limited preseason. Obviously, the Warriors were not in the bubble, but Oubre arrived in a trade fairly recently and Wiseman was drafted the third week of November. How long do you think it takes for this trust to be formed and for these guys to come together, knowing that organization, head coach, and who's on that roster? Start with Draymond.
Well, what I didn't like about the team was the identity of the group. Clearly, Steph Curry is going to be the primary scorer for this group. I didn't see the other players slide into secondary scorer or, you know, who's going to play screen role. What were they trying to do? But again, I don't want to make too big of a deal about it, but Steph Curry is in the now. You know,
yep.
Andrew Wiggins is in the now. Oubre.
Kelly Oubre is definitely in the now.
I mean, you know, okay. Wiseman, what's a fair expectation of a young player like that? You're asking him every night to be an athlete. He had some pretty nice athletic plays there where you said maybe in a year or two he can consistently do that. I'm okay with him. I just didn't like the other contributors, what they brought to the table to complement Steph Curry. I expected more from Andrew Wiggins.
You're not the only one.
Okay, I expected more. Now, yep. We're going to see once Draymond gets back into the fold what that's going to bring to make a fair assessment. But to be down 30 in an NBA game in the first game of the season, that's not the type of scenario you want to begin the season with, to be down by a significant margin on the first game. When everyone, normally the first game, you have a lot of energy. You have a lot of optimism and you're coming out playing just on energy alone. Like, okay, lose because the other team is better. Don't lose because they're better than you talent-wise and they're giving more effort and energy towards the game.
Mm-hmm.
The Brooklyn Nets. I mean, Kevin Durant hasn't played a game in, what, a year and a half? Almost 2 years now?
It was 500-something days that they set it up as. He has not played since Game 5 of the 2019 NBA Finals.
I mean, it was a very passive...
And it's not like Kevin Durant is back at peak form.
Yes, this
is his first game.
Passive game for the Warriors in Game 1. Right. They, for whatever the reason may have been, I don't know. I'm looking for this team to change the pendulum, if you will, from a year ago. And it starts with effort and energy. It starts with playing the game with a certain level of competitive spirit. And I just didn't see that. And I'm very concerned because, you know, this team has a great player. They have great players, with Draymond being one of those. And they're going to need a significant amount of, you know, energy or effort and
the energy, way they play. Energy, passion, grit every night. And we saw
every single night. And I didn't see that. Yep. Okay, you didn't make shots. I can live with that. Okay, the other team was incredibly hot shooting from three. I can live with that. There were loose balls, rebounds, boxing out, hustling up and down the floor, that's what concerned me, and that's not indicative of a Steve Kerr team. So just a little concern. That shocked me more than anything. In game two with the LA Lakers, it's very hard to play on the night you get your championship rings. It's always hard to play. So I don't put anything into that game. I did like the fact that the Lakers kind of rebounded. They got down early, but they came back, played, made it a competitive game to some degree. But it's very hard to play on the night you get your championship ring. The other team is always a little fired up, a little upset.
Well, as the Clippers should be. It was kind of surreal seeing the Lakers getting rings in an empty arena. And
with the
Clippers there. And just knowing what the Clippers were trying to achieve last season, and yeah, you said it. We've seen so many teams fall flat on opening night, getting their rings. That's a trap. That's a trap, especially with no crowd. There's very little, if anything, to say negatively about the Lakers. And Dennis Schroeder had a very strong debut, showing what he can bring to that lineup. The biggest thing I took away last night was that the Clippers were ready to compete, that Paul George is ready to silence the critics, and that Serge Ibaka fits perfectly into that lineup, which we started to discuss last week. Those are the things that stood out to me from the Clippers side.
Well, the one thing that did stand out to me as I was watching the game, but again, it's just one game. The Lakers had not one, not two, but three very athletic bigs.
Yep.
JaVale McGee, Dwight Howard, and Anthony Davis. And those athletic bigs equaled for them rim protection and rim runners on the floor. I was
and as you like to say, my friend, verticality.
The verticality of the game, absolutely. But
I wish I had some verticality, BJ.
Yeah,
I really do.
The rim running is huge because it puts so much pressure on the defense in transition. When you're a big can get down the floor, someone has to pick up that big and stop that big from just, you know, getting an alley-oop or an offensive rebound. But on the defensive end, I was really surprised at how the LA Clippers attacked the basket yesterday. They only have one rim protector now. And when Serge Ibaka is shooting perimeter shots, because he's basically transformed himself into a stretch big now, The other players can attack the basket because they don't have another rim protector. I thought that was very interesting. I thought that was interesting in the game. Now, game one, Marc Gasol, we know what he's able to bring. But the way the game is being played currently, pace, space, verticality for the bigs, for the most part, you know, it was just interesting to watch how they were attacking the basket because the Lakers were an outstanding defensive team a year ago. But I think this year, they're going to have to be a different team on the defensive end because they only have one guy that can protect at the rim. I guess to some degree, Montrez can do the same, but I don't think it's the same level that JaVale McGee or Dwight Howard did it. Those things kind of stood out to me. I know it's one game, but I was just it was interesting to see how the LA Clippers felt that they could attack the basket because they wouldn't have done that a year ago.
I like just reviewing the box score, and I don't want to spend too much time on one game here, but, you know, you talk about roster changes, and I know your stance on them needing a lead guard, and we know how the Nick Batum contract worked out in Charlotte, but really smart move plugging him into this team. Marcus Morris is out for the moment. Batum can play undersized four. He can play three. He can give you experience. He adds to the depth. And between him and the addition of Luke Kennard, like the numbers aren't going to blow you away, but these are very capable, versatile, rotational players that fit what they do. And, you know, I saw a certain aggressiveness out of Zubac last night, who is now, you know, coming off the bench and just, you know, screen, dive to the rim, and as you say, running the floor rim to rim. I like the makeup here. Whether or not they get that point guard move done, I don't know, but a good start for the Clippers. They still have their depth. They still have their versatility. As good as Trez had been for them, I think Ibaka, for what they need and who they are, is an upgrade. So we're going to be talking Lakers and Clippers all year long. I want to quickly pivot, BJ, to, you know, I love, and this goes back to years of being a basketball nut, and it goes back to some of the things we were talking about in the pre-show. You know, when NBA League Pass came along, and then, you know, every day I've got a ball in my hand, or I'm in the gym, or I'm coaching, or I'm teaching, I could not wait for Friday night during NBA season. I could not wait to get the dinner order in and have a couple of beverages and have the crew over and literally prioritize who we're going to watch on League Pass tonight. And now we get a Christmas slate on a Friday of some really good games. So you ready to rapid fire through this? We're going to go in the order in which the games will happen Friday. Before we start, what is your Christmas morning with the fam going to be like? And will you be free and clear in front of the big screen by 12 noon to dig in?
Well, in the Armstrong household, that will not be free and clear. There's no such thing as free and clear with three kids and family and everything that's going on. But
yep,
the game probably will be on in the background. It will be on mute, of course. And there will be lots of, you know, being appreciative of things, what we've been able to, you know, do to get through this year, like so many. But to be thankful. And, you know, 2020 it's been a, let's say, different year. Different?
Yeah.
Difficult?
To say the least. Challenging. I like to say challenging.
Challenging. So
we're, you know, we're the fortunate.
To 2021 yeah. And the Armstrong household.
Yeah. We're the fortunate ones, but it's still challenging. So.
Yes. So. But the game will be on in the background. And from now on, every now and then, I'll be glancing over at the television to see what's happening in the NBA circles.
All right. Well, that's all you can ask for. I'll keep you posted on how I'm programming the day, but this is going to be a very carefully curated and planned out Christmas Day viewing. So, Pelicans at the Heat. Interesting that Lonzo Ball was not extended on his rookie deal. I'll get to that.
How come you say that? How come?
I thought he'd be part of the future plan in line with Zion and Ingram. But he still may be, but he will enter free agency and there'll be, as you like to say, a competition for his services. And if you've never said that, I just made it up and it sounded good. So, you know, Holiday and Favors are out. Steven Adams and Eric Bledsoe are in. Mix that with Ingram, Zion, Ball, J.J. Redick, Josh Hart, and the Pelicans are once again going to be a very exciting team to watch. The Heat, of course, coming off the NBA Finals appearance with the quick turnaround. Avery Bradley, Mo Harkless added to the rotation. Jay Crowder now in Phoenix. Derek Jones now in Portland. Give me one thing you're looking for from each team as they match up Christmas Day that you want to see.
Well, with the New Orleans Pelicans, they have a new coach. They have a new system, a new thought process. And what I'm looking for from the Pelicans is the following. The health of Zion Williamson. That's what I'm looking for. I want to see a healthy Zion. I want to see a young man that's capable of playing consistently over 30 minutes a night. And then we'll go from there. You know, we're talking a lot about what they could be based on the potential of Zion, because he's only played, what, 19 or so games in the NBA. But when you see him, you see the realm of possibilities. Now I want to see it. So before we start saying the future, let's do something. Let's put together 70 games to figure out, is this real or is this just something that looks good on paper? So from the organization's perspective, I'm going to proceed with caution before I start signing players. Ingram last year had a great year. Well-deserved. He bet on himself, as all young players should, if you believe in who you are. And then we'll figure it out. But this group hasn't achieved anything. So as far as I'm concerned, there is no bright future because we haven't had a bright present moment yet. Give us something where we can hold our hat on and say, this team could be X, Y, and Z based on 30 games of playing together or 45 games. I would like to see them have a consistent...
Need a real sample size here. And of course, we're referring to the Pelicans not choosing to extend Lonzo Ball before he becomes a free agent.
Well, I'm sure they...
Well, they considered it.
Had some offers. It wasn't at the number that, you know, Lonzo and his team thought that he should be at. I don't know. I have no idea. I wasn't privy to those negotiations. But in saying that, I want to see this team now perform. Okay, I've bought into Zion could be. I've heard he looks in great shape. The coaches are playing him 30-plus minutes in the preseason. Now I'm ready to see it. And then, hopefully by the end of the season, Eric, you and I will say the Pelicans are going to be X or the Pelicans are going to be Y. But let's stop going on all the hypotheticals,
right. Not what they potential, could be. Let's see something.
And all of the things. Because now Lonzo is at a place in his career where he's not a rookie. He's been around the league now a couple years now where he should be ready to perform. Zion, let's get ready to perform. Ingram last year was an all-star, and they have some good veteran players. So now let's get after it. So I want to see, and then after the season, let's figure out who's staying and who's going, because, you know, this is they have depth. They have excellent young players, but now let's go out here and, you know, win some games.
What is significant progress to you for New Orleans?
To be playing meaningful games late in the season.
So whether that's them in the 7-10 play-in or them playing for positioning higher.
Yes, I want them to be playing meaningful games because they do have a lack of experience. They have a lack of experience from their core players, Lonzo, yep. Ingram, Zion. Those are their core players, at least at the beginning of the season. Now, you have Steven Adams, Bledsoe, and these guys. They've been around. They're battle-tested. But they're more complementary players at this point if they're going to be a good team. And now I'm expecting that group, a young player, to go from being a potential player now to taking that word potential off of his name and being an actual player. And that means you got to do this every single night. So those three players in particular have to make a giant step. It's not an easy one. A giant step where consistently they take on the challenges, they begin to play meaningful games, and hopefully that translates for the New Orleans Pelicans a chance or better yet, to be in the playoffs when the season ends. That, to me, is a very successful season for this group.
Their opponent, the Miami Heat, knowing the run they made, the chemistry, the Heat culture, the short turnaround, what's realistic in terms of where Miami is to start this season? I don't want to say it's human nature to have some sort of a letdown and take a step back before they rev it up and get it going again, but I'm curious to see who they're going to be from the start of the season as we move through. Where do you think they're going to be the start?
Well, it's interesting to listen to their leader, Jimmy Butler, talk. If you listen to Jimmy Butler, you think that they didn't make the playoffs a year ago. He loves the role of the underdog. He's comfortable in that role. He's comfortable without the experts and all of the media choosing them to come out of the East. He's comfortable with that. He accepts that. He thrives in that environment. I think this team, with the really development of one player, Bam Adebayo has been the one player that has propelled them to the next level. They have a five-man or four-man or a big who can play. They can play the game through him, and that allows them the versatility and flexibility to play the game in this new world of NBA that we live in, with pace and space and moving the ball from side to side through their big. I mean, Bam basically is a triple threat waiting to happen every single night. I mean, he's capable of getting a triple-double every single night. And I expect them now to go for it. I expect them to be a team that says the following. We have two really good players in Bam Adebayo and Jimmy Butler. We have excellent shooting, Tyler Hero and Duncan Robinson. And we have key role players, contributors. You know, I thought the addition of Avery Bradley fits their culture. Andre Iguodala fits their culture. And they have enough pieces to go for it. I think a lot of people aren't putting their name in the top three or four. But I think this group accepts that challenge. And I think that's what fuels them. So they're well coached. I like how they play. And they have the one element that I love about all good teams. They're a tough group.
Yep.
This is a tough group. They have more than solid guard play and Goran and the players that they have playing that position. I like this team. I think this is a team, again, that could come out of the East when it's all said and done, because they have depth, they have size, they have athletic ability, but most importantly, they're tough. They're going to get every loose ball.
And now very experienced.
Right.
Regardless of veterans or young players, you could say they're all experienced right now.
Yeah. You're not going to beat them because you're going to outwork them. You're not going to beat them because you're going to be tougher than them. You're going to beat them because your talent is superior than their talent. And there aren't, you know, they can shoot the ball with the best of any of them. And it's good.
And it's crazy to think, like, you know, however you want to order the teams and make your picks in the preseason, which I know we don't spend a ton of time on, like, they're the defending champs of the Eastern Conference, and they're bringing back that team with some slight tweaks with role players. Like, they're definitely in the top three. There's no doubt in my mind. Whether they finish there or not is another story, but so tough, so connected. And you know, this is a, you can't look too closely at it as a test for the Pelicans, because it's their first game of the year. But this will tell us something about the Pelicans' toughness with how they perform against the Heat to start the season. So it'll be interesting. One thing we know about the Heat on Christmas Day, they're going to play hard. Whatever else happens, we'll figure out. So looking forward to seeing that. Warriors at Bucks. We began talking about the Warriors before. We've talked about the Milwaukee roster changes. Giannis obviously getting the max. Milwaukee is, you know, this is as you were saying before, like, you know, it's the here and now. This is it. This is the time. One thing you're going to, we already talked about the Warriors in terms of competing. One thing for the Bucks that you are looking for here, as they look to set the proper tone to start the season, they tip off Wednesday night against the Celtics. Of course, this will be their second game, Christmas Day, Bucks Warriors. What's one thing you're looking for?
With the Milwaukee Bucks, I'm really looking how they're going to utilize the addition of Jrue Holiday. Jrue Holiday, to me, is a player that is going to have to make this transition to the Bucks quickly and have a huge role in the success of this team if they're going to advance and get to the finals, let alone win the finals. Jrue Holiday is going to have to get adjusted very quickly here. And I'm looking to see how they're going to do that. I'm looking to see how they're going to utilize him in screen role, how much freedom he's going to be allowed to play with. But more importantly, I'm looking to see how comfortable he's going to feel going out there, having to play and be a huge part on both sides of the ball. They really need him to be a leader and feel comfortable in that leadership position on day one. So for me, with the Bucks, I'm looking to see what Jrue Holiday is going to do at the beginning of this game, at the beginning of the season, and how that's going to really translate for them, because they need him to play a big part. But more importantly, they need him to play well if they're going to do what their expectations are, which is to win an NBA championship.
With these new pieces to the puzzle for Milwaukee, Holiday, Portis, Torrey Craig, DJ Augustine, knowing the pressure that's on the organization, and of course Giannis, the two-time MVP, knowing the disappointment of the last 2 years in the playoffs, what does your gut tell you about how long it's going to take, or how long will it be until we know what type of team this is going to be? What's the sample size here before we start saying, okay, the Bucks are good enough, the Bucks aren't good enough?
Well, I think with this team, it's not going to be wins and losses. You got to think long-term with this team. Jrue Holiday has to be more than a spot-up shooter. Jrue Holiday has to accept some level of responsibility for carrying the team during segments of the game. We clearly know Giannis will be the first, second option. I mean, this guy has the ultra green light, as he should. He is a star of stars. But we need another player who can create off the dribble when Giannis is double teamed or triple teamed. Middleton, I think, role shall probably remain the same because he can catch and shoot and he can score, and he can score in bunches, and we need him to do that. But if there's one glaring weakness that I saw with the Milwaukee Bucks in the playoffs, was they did not have a second option who could create off the dribble. And I think that, to me, is a role that has to be filled by Jrue Holiday. Jrue Holiday has to step in and play screen role with Giannis, play screen role with Middleton, and be able to exploit or explore the possibilities of how he's going to have to score and maybe play in a 5 to 10 minute stretch every game where he's going to actually carry the offense when one or both of those guys are not on the floor and feel comfortable being aggressive as an offensive player. He certainly has the talent to do it, but I think the consistency of him scoring closer to 20 points a game every night will benefit the Milwaukee Bucks. But it's going to come with the mindset of saying, I have to be more than a facilitator. I have to be more than just a defensive guard. I have to go out here every single night, put pressure on the defense, and say, some nights I got to have 25 or 30 points. And Giannis has to figure out how to balance that to win the game. Because if they can find that balance with three guys being able to score in the playoffs over 30 points, now you're talking about having a real potent team, right?
Yeah.
You're talking about a team that could could really make some make some damages here, especially as the playoffs begin. But that's what I see. Giannis is good enough to win. Look, he can win 45, 50 games by himself.
Sure.
But he's going to need help to get through the playoffs. And I think that's going to start with my guy, Drew Holiday.
You know, it's interesting to think about. As obviously, Giannis does so many different things on the floor. And I think we take for granted, you know, every night he's you know, 25, you know, 12 to 15 rebounds, it seems, with the focus of the defense squarely on him. If the Holiday Middleton combination can become this kind of dual backcourt wing force, and you know every night you're getting 50 minimum combined from those guys, and it takes the pressure off Giannis. And some nights Giannis may not have to feel like he has to carry the team scoring wise. Of course, he's in the middle of so much of the playmaking in the middle of the floor and getting the ball to their spot up shooters when the defense collapses. But as you've been saying, that second playmaker, that second creator off the dribble to take the pressure off is going to help. But, you know, the Holiday Middleton combo, to see how they can help each other and make each other's life easier, in turn to make Giannis's life easier. I'm interested to see how that's going to play out for Milwaukee on the offensive side of the ball. So, you know, we talked about the Warriors a bit at the top. Quickly, you know, we don't know yet. If you know, please share if Draymond is going to play on Christmas. Whether he plays on Christmas or not, it's early in the season. But my big question for you is, what does Draymond Green bring to the floor that will help Kelly Oubre and Andrew Wiggins on a nightly basis? Start with defense first and then pivot down to the offensive end.
Well, defensively, he's terrific. He's an organizer. He can organize the game, and his ability to switch, especially in this positionless game that we play. So if Draymond is on the floor defensively, he will help the entire team. Where I think he will really help them the most is his ability to help them get organized on the offensive end, because he is a nice ball handler and he can make plays from the power forward position. And maybe that is the missing piece that we didn't see last night. So I'm interested to see how this all shakes out, because what I saw last night, I was a little concerned. I'm still concerned. And I don't know how much I should put into what I saw last night, but certainly they need to get everyone back. Now, I think I heard correctly that he has a mild hamstring strain. I think that's what they reported. So we'll see. But I want to see this team, the Golden State Warriors, get back. I want to see them get back to playing and kind of make an assessment of who they are. Because, you know, I expect them, or at least by the moves they've made, they're making these moves with the expectation that they're going to be a playoff team. Yep. And as you know, the West is stacked. And we'll see how this plays out. But I didn't like what I saw in game one.
With Oubre and Wiggins, both with high-level athletic ability, length, the ability to slash and finish, the ability to both make the three, how much does Draymond's high post passing and playmaking ability help both of those guys get comfortable?
Well, again, it's a lot of this is going to depend on the spacing and defensive presence that they have. First, they got to get a stop. First, they're going to have to, like, let's establish defensively who we could be. I think Andrew Wiggins and Oubre should be, you know, pretty good defenders, mm-hmm. along with Draymond Green. I think they should be, those three should be really good defenders. Now, the kid Wiseman has length and athletic ability. I think he should be a pretty good defender. At the very least, he should be a rim protector with his size and length and athletic ability. So I'm not really looking for Andrew Wiggins and Oubre to come out and score like Clay and do that. But what I am looking is for this team to take on and establish a new identity. Defensively, they should be better. You know, should they be slashing and doing things to the basket? Of course. because of their athletic ability. You know, you asked the question about Andrew Wiggins and Kelly Oubre, but I just want them to establish their identity, who this group is going to be. And there's no replacement for effort and energy. So what is Draymond going to bring back on the offensive end? Hey, I don't know. If you miss shots, you miss shots. You know, I'm not expecting either one of those players to be 30-plus scorers this year. But what I am expecting them to be are players who are very athletic. I'm expecting them to compete at a very high level. I'm expecting both of those players to be defensive players. And I'm expecting the Warriors to take on a new identity with this group to compete. And I didn't see that in game one. So I'm hoping so you're asked the question, what am I hoping? I'm hoping Draymond's leadership. I'm hoping Draymond's passion for the game. I want to see some screaming on the floor, because you could only take so many of those types of losses through the course of a season.
Yep.
And, you know, you don't want that to become the routine of saying, hey, the Warriors, let's just drive it down their throat. Let's just drive it down their throat because they can't defend, or this is a team that, you know, is not going to give. They're not going to be a resilient group. That's not what you want. So there's some work to do. We get it. And I'm sure Coach Kerr and his staff are going to put together a game plan. But, you know, certainly you don't want this to be the trend for a Golden State Warriors team moving forward.
Nets at Celtics. Ironic. Oh, Kyrie returns well, I just to let Boston you, yeah. twice with no fans. He's already.
Should I get the sage? The Where's arena? The sage? Where's my sage? Where's my sage?
The sage commentary out of the way now.
Why was that such a big deal? I didn't. Why was that such a big deal?
Because that's the time we're living in. Because, okay. You know, it's only on video in Boston, and we know the relationship with him and the Celtics and the fan base. So the biggest deal is Kyrie Irving and Kevin Durant looking very good together on the floor to start the season. This is a team that's got tremendous depth, tremendous versatility. I hope for their benefit they don't make the move to get James Harden, because I think their depth is going to play a big role in their success this season. What did you like? Let me rephrase that. How good as is can this Nets team be, knowing that each week or 10 days KD is going to keep getting more and more comfortable out there on the floor? And obviously what we saw on opening night, Kyrie Irving is already quite comfortable.
Well, this is going to come in as a surprise to many when I say the following. I was more impressed with their defensive balance than any part of the game. I was really impressed with the fundamentals of the Brooklyn Nets. I was impressed how they addressed the ball on the defensive end. They were connected. They were communicating. They had a plan. I saw Kyrie Irving and Kevin Durant defending. That's what I liked. Now, when they're scoring and shooting the way they were shooting, they're going to be tough to beat. Do I expect them to score and shoot like that all the time? No, I don't. But they have the luxury of having not one, but two players who can take the game over offensively at any given moment. Now, Coach Nash clearly has depth.
That sounds good, by the way. Coach Nash.
I love
sounds
Coach Nash.
Good.
I like
sounds
that. Good. I like that. Coach Nash has the ability of a lot of different players. In particular, Caris LeVert. Caris LeVert got 20 points last night off the bench. You know, Spencer Dinwiddie now has been inserted into the starting lineup. Joe Harris. They have a lot of pieces on this team. Now, defensively is what got my attention. That's what really got my attention. Now, if they can consistently give that level of effort and energy for the entire year, okay, the talent will win its fair share of games, and they will advance in the playoffs. But that's a lot of ifs. So let's see how it plays out. I like the team. I like what I saw. Kevin Durant hopefully will get more and more comfortable. But I have to be patient with him. That's a significant injury that he had. And when he's feeling good, he'll have nights like he had last night. I mean, he had the easiest 22 or 24 points last night I've seen.
22 points on 7 of 16 from the floor, only took two threes, 7 of 7 from the line. I mean, it's
I mean, he didn't break a sweat.
Yeah, great way to start. And just real quick on LeVert, you know, 20 points in just under 25 minutes on 17 shots, but you know, he also gave them 9 rebounds, 5 assists, and 2 steals. So
yeah, so just I like what they did. Yeah. I liked them again on the other side of the ball. And say what you want about Kyrie Irving, whether you like him or you don't like him, I'm a huge fan of Kyrie because Kyrie is a player. When you get done with all of the hearsay and whatever, the man is a player. He's a player.
As you like to say, let's look at what's going on inside the 94 by 50 rectangle. Yep.
That man is a player. And I want to say this here after watching them last night. Kyrie is already a problem when you play against him because he has ability, he's crafty, he can score. And as a guard, I appreciate any small guard who can finish with his left hand in traffic. And he does that as well as anyone in the NBA. But here's the thing that I noticed last night. You can't double-team Kyrie now because of the presence of Kevin Durant.
Yep.
Now, I don't know how many guards are equipped to deal with him one-on-one.
I don't know. I don't know if there is
one. He's healthy this year. If he's healthy this year, and they get over, let's say they get over 60 games together, because he only has 72 games. They say they get over 60 games. He will be in the MVP conversation because you're not going to be able to stop him. I mean, he got 20? He had like 24 points too. That was just incredibly easy. Incredibly easy.
He had 26. He had 26 points on 16 shots. He was 10 of 16, 4 of 7 from 3, 4 rebounds, 4 assists, and one turnover in 25 and change minutes.
Now, here is a go-to move go-to play after every timeout. I'm just going to run a 1-3 screen roll. Pick and choose your poison on how you're going to defend that one.
You all night
pick
long.
And choose.
All night long.
Now, that's a problem. That's a problem right there. And that's what I saw. I saw Kyrie Irving just playing freely with no double team because you have to be concerned with number 7 now. Kevin Durant.
Number 7, and then you've got a big at all times just rolling to the rim, whether it's DeAndre or it's Jared Allen.
So that's what I saw. I'm excited. I'm hoping that Kevin Durant can just stay healthy. It was great to see him back on the floor. And he was playing, he wasn't playing passively. He was playing freely. So I was excited to see him have confidence in his body. You know, he has one of those bodies where, you know, he's thin, but he's strong. He looked strong last night. He looked fit. He looked on balance, and it was great to see him driving to the basket and being fearless and shooting jump shots. And I mean, every time you see that young man, 7-footer who can play like that, it's always interesting. So it was great to see last night. It was a good, you know, game one for them.
The Celtics starting the season shorthanded, of course, without Kemba Walker in the lineup. Remains to be seen if Tristan Thompson is playing on Christmas. Knowing where they were in the bubble, knowing the changes that have been made, I don't think Brad Stevens yet knows how this rotation is going to play out in the long run with a lot of youth competing for different spots. I feel like the Celtics are going to be a work in progress for a while. Where do you think they are to start the season? And with the roster the way it is now, what do you foresee from them in 2021.
You know, I always try to take the mentality of next man up, because you have to be ready. You know, guys are going to get hurt. But Kemba Walker seems to be a much bigger part of this team in this group than I had imagined when he first came over. I thought he was going to be important to this team, but his presence on the floor, they're a totally different team when he is healthy and playing than when he's not. I've always been a Kemba Walker fan. I love watching him play, but his leadership is really missed with this group. And I can't give an accurate assessment of this team until Kemba Walker is healthy, because this group needs him. Now, is it his leadership? Is it his scoring? Yes. Is it just his ability to calm the rest of the team down? Whatever it is, they need him. So let's get this group healthy. Let's get them where they're playing. And then we can say, this is who the Boston Celtics are. Now, are they going to patch it up? Are they going to play? And Jason Tatum is going to probably come out and score 30. I mean, I'm just excited to see the matchup of Jason Tatum and Kevin Durant, if you just ask me. Let those two guys come out and just go one-on-one. I want to see Marcus Smart guarding, you know, Kyrie Irving. Let's just get a two-on-two game here, and then just the other six guys, just, you know, you guys just stand on the side over there if you really want to know what I'm looking for. So, I mean, offensively, the thought of Kevin Durant and Jason Tatum just going back and forth, I mean, that's a Christmas gift unto itself from an offensive perspective. I don't know how much defense will be played in that matchup, but there should be a lot of step backs, a lot of fadeaways.
Should be an entertaining exchange of offensive abilities.
Yes.
It's too bad we won't have Kemba back to play Kyrie. Marcus Smart taking on the challenge will be a lot of fun. You know, those guys have, and from what I understand, Tatum and Kyrie remain very good friends. The rest of the guys all took a very diplomatic approach when asked about Kyrie, his time with the Celtics, and him leaving. But I want to see the competition on the floor. That's for sure. My big thing with the Celtics right now is, without Kemba Walker, and you're hitting on it, they don't have the energy. They don't have the leadership. They don't have that easy offense where, when he's in that groove and he's playing pick and roll, and they're getting stops, they're out in transition, he's hitting threes in transition, and then he's that threat on pick and roll, which makes everyone else's life easier. Without him, it just makes everyone else's life, A, that more difficult, and you're asking too many players. I know the next man up mentality, as whether you're the second star, whether you're a role player, but you're asking too many players to take the next step forward in terms of responsibility and shouldering the load all at once, especially with the loss of Hayward. Then you have Walker out of the lineup, and now the entire focus of the offense is Brown and Tatum. And as impressive as the leaps have been with Jaylen Brown, he's still not a guy that his game is not, in my mind, there yet where he's going to carry the team offensively for long stretches. He's a guy that gets a ton of stuff in the flow of the game, gets a ton of stuff off the Walker action, the Tatum action, and of course in transition after getting stops. So you know, I want to see some of these younger players develop. I want to see who's going to stick around. I want to see Romeo Langford return to the lineup, who they are very excited about his potential, but he was hurt during the playoffs in the bubble with a wrist injury, so he's going to be out for a while. So Teague is in. Hopefully we see Tristan Thompson. And, you know, the Celtics did not look very good in their preseason games, but Wednesday night we'll see how they respond with the test with the Bucks, and then, of course, Friday, Christmas, Nets at Celtics. Celtic Nation watching from afar, but you know, BJ, you know how into the games we get as you.
Yes, I do. Unfortunately, I do.
We've talked a lot of Lakers. The Mavericks are visiting the Lakers on Christmas Day. Luka, of course, the conversation stops and starts with him with Dallas. But Dallas also gained some really valuable experience last season. They added Josh Richardson, which is a nice rotational piece for them. Luka's name is obviously now being thrown around in the MVP discussions for the upcoming season. What is realistic progression in your mind for the Dallas Mavericks, knowing who they are talent-wise and also knowing the competition of the Western Conference?
Well, I think Rick Carlisle.
That's your guy.
He is my guy. He's been around, and I think Rick Carlisle will understand this and appreciate this. Is how quickly is he going to forget? How quickly is he going to get this current roster, this current team, to forget about what happened last year? Most of us, myself included, felt after watching them a year ago that they are now ahead of schedule.
And I'm sorry, forgetting in terms of we can't hang our hat on last season's success. We're back at the starting point now.
We're back. You know, I remember, you know, Coach Jackson always reminding us at the beginning of the new season, you know, after we had success the previous season, of, okay, guys, how long do I have to wait? The celebration is over.
Right.
It's time to play basketball. You know, Luka has taken a huge step forward. The organization has taken a huge step forward. We talk about playing meaningful games. The New Orleans Pelicans are hoping to do or repeat what they saw a year ago, what Dallas was able to do a year ago, playing meaningful games with a young group, nucleus.
Yep.
Now, Luka, you've arrived. With that comes what we're talking about right now, Eric, is expectations. How to manage those expectations. Because for the rest of Luka Doncic's career, as long as he's healthy, that young man will be in the conversation as an MVP candidate. And with that comes, when is he going to win? Because he's a big-time player. He's a big-time passer. He's a big-time shot maker in key moments. And he's clearly not afraid of the situation. So let's see how this team responds. This is a new season. This is a new group. But let's see, have they forgotten? You know, it's important for all players who play that game to have a short memory. You had a great year last year. It's very promising for this year. But that was last year. This is this year. And this year presents a new set of problems. So I'm looking forward to it. I'm looking forward to the Christmas matchup. I want to see the Don. I want to see what he's added to his game since the 60 days or so since I haven't seen him play.
Yeah.
I want to see
he's going to bring. You know he's added something. You know
he's added something. You know, I saw he had a nice 27 or 30 in the preseason against Milwaukee. You know, I was like, okay, he's back. He's ready. So, and he's one of the great players in the NBA. And, you know, we love the new up-and-coming star. And he has been anointed that new up-and-coming star. And
rightly so.
Yeah, he's right there. I mean, you can't take it away. So, as they say, they want to see the king versus the Don.
Yeah.
I just been wanting to say that all day.
I'm hoping we get a few sequences where we see LeBron James on Luka and we see Anthony Davis on Kristaps. And we see how Dallas plays that and responds. And, you know, the Lakers coming off of ring night and losing to the Clippers, you best bet they're going to be locked in for the Mavericks on Christmas with the world watching. So this will be a nice little test for Dallas to see, you know, who they are to start the season. Clippers, Nuggets, rematch of the West semis. The Clippers, of course.
Is this game eight or is game seven over? Is this game eight?
Game eight of the 2020 Western Conference semis, except there have been roster and coaching changes. You know, Clips again opening night, beat the Lakers. Nuggets, I think people, you know, they've been in the conference finals. Well, conference finals last year, game seven, second round the year before, but on the upswing and improving. And now Gary Harris, Will Barton are healthy and back. And Michael Porter Jr. has clearly shown he is NBA ready and on a path for potentially a special career. Your man Bol Bol off the bench, Millsap back, Joker, Murray, the rest of the crew. Do we need to, and I'm not saying we as you and I, because I think you and I both take the Denver Nuggets very seriously as a contender, but the general masses who are ranking teams, making picks, or just looking at the landscape of the West. I mean, the Denver Nuggets need to be looked at now as a serious NBA title contender after what they did last season, wouldn't you think?
Yeah, they do. And this team was very serious because they had great players play great in big moments. Jokic and Jamal Murray. They were great. They were fabulous throughout the bubble. But their role players also played their role great in the bubble. In particular, two players, Jeremy Grant and Plumlee. Those players are no longer with them. I'm a little concerned because those two players were veteran players who understood their role. And the formula for the NBA has always been and shall remain: great players have to be great and role players have to play their role great. Now, I don't get the idea of watching from afar that Porter Jr. thinks he's a role player.
No.
Yeah, I don't get the idea. He is a great talent, and I hope he is the best version of himself. I hope he's whatever that is, because that young man can score the basketball. And if he is healthy, I mean, he may be something, you know, he may be that player. I have no idea.
Yeah.
But what I do know is that it's going to require chemistry on the team to make this all work. Now, they had an incredible amount of chemistry last year, whether it was due to injuries or things just came together, but their two great players were fabulous. Now, who's going to fill that role, literally, of the role players? Is Porter Jr. going to come in? We know he can score the ball and score the ball in bunches. I mean, that young man has a pretty shot. He can score that basketball, but is he going to provide to this group, to this team, what Jeremy Grant did, which was he was a terrific defensive player versus Kawhi Leonard. And he had to defend all the other team's best players, Donovan Mitchell, LeBron James. Is Bol Bol going to fill that role that Plumlee did beautifully, coming off the bench and providing all of the effort and energy plays? Bol Bol is one of my favorite players. I played against his dad. His dad was one of my favorite people to play. I mean, he just puts a smile every time. I never met anyone who didn't like Manute. So I think this team has talent, make no doubt about it. I think this team is ready. I think this team will show up in big moments. But I'm looking at their role players. Normally, it's the other way around. You're looking for their star players to take a jump. I'm looking at this team's role players to accept their responsibility and play their role. I think they have two star players.
Yep. And I think they have three, sorry to cut you off, I think they have three very reliable role players in Will Barton, Gary Harris, and Paul Millsap to start. Now, yes. Michael Porter Jr., I'm not comparing him in any way to Kawhi Leonard, but when Kawhi Leonard won the 2014 Finals MVP, he emerged from this young talent as a role player to then getting on the path.
Defensively.
And he did it defensively. And obviously.
That's my question for him.
Yep.
I'm not asking whether Michael Porter Jr., if he's healthy, that man can score 20 points in his sleep.
Yes,
that man can score.
And let's not forget that his center is the best passing big in the NBA and can make his life very, very easy on the offensive end.
Can he accept the defensive challenge like Jeremy Grant did a year ago?
Yep.
Plumlee did. I could play Plumlee and Jeremy Grant, and they would make contributions, significant contributions to the game by not calling one play for them.
Yep.
That is a luxury that every coach in the NBA would love to have, because Plumlee and Jeremy Grant were terrific role players with that group. Sometimes you just find something that works with that group. You could play Jeremy Grant with Jokic. You could play Plumlee with Jokic, Jamal Murray, and you.
Yeah,
they were terrific.
And you could steal minutes with Jokic getting a breather and play Plumlee at the five with Grant or Millsap at the four. Absolutely.
Now,
and Grant was playing 3-2 because at the end of the day, he's worked on his game enough on both ends where Jeremy Grant, he can make the three. So
I love Will. I love his energy. You know, he talks a little trash, gives you a little attitude. I like that. Now he's coming back into the fold, which is a great asset for Coach Malone to have. But again, I'm looking for the role players to really show that they're capable of doing the dirty work that's going to be needed to win games. You can't just win games all the time consistently on the offensive end. Someone's got to get in and get those loose balls. And Jeremy Grant and Plumlee, to me, were blue collar players. And for Denver's sake, I hope that someone fills that void, because you're going to need it if you're going to win and advance to where they really want to advance. They're going to need someone to fill that gap, because it's there and they have the talent to do it.
Another player on their roster who we saw, you know, he's fringe rotation, but PJ Dozier is a pretty capable 6'7" swing. And do you know who he's related to, which is why he wears jersey number 35?
I don't, but I think I may know this. Did his dad play in the NBA or no?
I'm not sure if his dad was the Dozier that we're thinking of from back in the day. I think who played at Memphis, but he is a relative of the late, great Reggie Lewis, which is why he wears number 35, which I never knew until that was shared on a broadcast back in the moment.
I didn't know that. You know, I had the I knew Reggie Lewis. I had the pleasure of knowing him, playing against him in college as well as in the NBA. What an amazing player. Reggie Lewis was...
He was special.
Wow. Wow. He was...
Yeah. I'm sorry. It's PJ Dozier. And I'm looking up right now to see who... And ironically, he was a two-way contract with the Celtics and in the G League.
His dad, right?
Before ending up... Denver. No, well, I'm talking about PJ, who's on Denver now. I'm looking to see who his dad is. He's from Columbia, South Carolina. He played at South Carolina. He went undrafted. And he's the second cousin of Reggie Lewis.
Wow.
And his uncle is Terry Dozier, who played for the Hornets. Terry's exactly your year. He played at South Carolina, and he played at Dunbar in Baltimore, of course, with Reggie Lewis, Reggie Williams, David Wingate, and Muggsy Bogues. So there's our historical footprint for the day. But, when you asked me about the lineage of my Celtic fandom, so much of that is tied to Reggie and what he, you know, what he meant to watch and was going to be the next guy after the big three were out of gas and broken down and became captain. And then, unfortunately, we know what happened in the summer of 93, but he is still remembered by many in our world, which is refreshing because he was a joy to watch play. And from everything I'm told, Reggie Lewis was a heck of a human being, which I'm sure you can attest to. So Christmas Day game should be great. I've got one other question before we get to our close. Who will settle into their new surroundings quicker? Russell Westbrook in Washington or John Wall in Houston? And I just saw an alert about 10, 15 minutes ago that Wall and Cousins will not play Wednesday night due to some COVID-19 protocol issue. But I digress. Who will settle into their new surroundings quicker? Russell Westbrook in Washington or John Wall in Houston?
Let's think about this.
I think this is a good question. I came up with it all by myself.
Well, I think Russell Westbrook familiarity with the coaching staff there in Washington gives him an advantage where he's going to settle in and settle in quickly. You know, Scott Brooks and him worked together for many years in Oklahoma City. So I think Russell Westbrook is already comfortable with the system. He knows the people, and he has a meaningful relationship with them. Clearly, it's a good one because Scott Brooks wanted to coach him again. Okay. So I think that gives Russell Westbrook, you know, in this situation, an advantage over John Wall. I don't know what the situation currently is. I haven't had a chance to look at it as we're doing this podcast of what's going on down there, but it appears to be something is going on with the protocol. I also heard, you know, I was reading before we jumped on the podcast that the same may occur for James Harden as well. And as far as playing because of COVID and the protocols that the NBA has implemented to go on. So we'll see. John Wall, certainly him and DeMarcus looked, you know, I've seen them play a couple games. I didn't watch every game, but I saw, you know, flipped on the television. They both look to be playing well. I mean, DeMarcus is well documented what he's coming back from. And John Wall looked great. He's coming back from a significant injury as well. So let's hope that those guys get back on the floor and the headlines that we're seeing right now, let's hope that they're not true, but maybe they are. And, you know, but, you know, so goes the NBA and we got to move on.
Yeah. And Wall and Cousins, of course, longtime friends, teammates at Kentucky, and crazy how they're now reunited and now they really, really need each other. Like, regardless of if Harden is there or not in Houston for the long run, but Wall and Cousins can really help each other both get back on track, and it would be fun to see them playing well together in Houston. And of course, seeing how the Westbrook-Beal pairing looks in Washington is going to be very interesting as well, especially with how well Beal played last year without John Wall and had to be more of a primary ball-in-hand playmaker. He'll take a step back from that, obviously, with the presence of Westbrook. And then, as you said, the familiarity that Westbrook has with Coach Brooks and Bradley Beal, obviously. Well, not obviously, but it seems like there's a positive relationship there despite the team's struggles, which, of course, were happening last year in some part due to Wall being out. So lots to look at as we enter this very unique opening of the season, holiday week. Christmas, I'm sure for you, brings back a lot of memories from all walks of your journey, but specifically from the league. What's one great story from BJ Armstrong that revolves around Christmas and the NBA?
Christmas in the NBA as a player, it's kind of a bittersweet moment. because you never really get a chance to enjoy the actual day itself when you play on Christmas. And as a player, I was doing one of the following. Actually, I was doing this my whole college and professional career. I was moving around somewhere during the holidays. And in the pros, if I wasn't playing on Christmas and I was fortunate enough to play on teams that were, you know, played many times on Christmas, you're either traveling or you're getting ready to play, which doesn't give you much time to, you know, let Christmas, you know, be Christmas in the traditional way that you think about it. You know, it's very hard to be playing the game at 1 o'clock or 2 o'clock and then get up and experience Christmas. You got to get to the arena. You got to eat. It's another day.
It's game day. It's,
yeah. And
but a different routine.
Yes. When I played on the road, I found it much more difficult because you're sitting in a hotel getting either room service, trying to experience this Christmas, you know, experience, right? The joy of the holidays in a hotel, you know? It always felt a little awkward. You know, you would have a holiday meal that the team would try to put together. Yep. But it wasn't, the macaroni and cheese didn't taste the same that it tasted at home. The turkey wasn't the same.
Yep.
You know, the stuffing wasn't the same. So it was always a little different. And, you know, you're sitting in your hotel room kind of, you know, by yourself during the holidays. But you're playing a game and look, you get it. You get the entertainment value that you have. So it was always a bittersweet moment. And when I retired, it's the first time that I realized, oh, wow, this is what you're really supposed to be doing, or this is what you could be doing on Christmas. And it wasn't until after I retired that I was able to go to a Laker game on Christmas Day that I had an appreciation for how difficult those young men, especially the team on the road. I don't know why I have this compassion for the traveling team, because you got to travel there the night before, right? You don't just go there on the day of the game, of the commitment that it takes to play that game. And I didn't have kids at the time when I was playing, but I would imagine that that would be even more difficult if you have young kids playing on Christmas because of what that means. So, it's always been tough for me. I get the business. I get this is what we all signed up for. I'm not complaining about it, but it's tough. And I always look at those people behind those jerseys, and I look at those coaches, and I look at the executives, and I look at all those people. You know, it's fun to go to a game on Christmas with your kids. I mean, it's you open your gifts, you eat. Mom kissed us off to the game. You guys enjoy. We'll have food and things when we come back. Da, da, da. It was like a great, but for those players, especially those people who are traveling, it was always very, very difficult. And I've always enjoyed traveling and playing on the road, but the Christmas game always, especially when I was on the road then, I always, it was like one of those, like I just, oh. And you would turn on and look at the parade on television, or you would turn on and you hear what everyone else is doing. And I can always hear my family going, we wish you were here. I just always remember that. So, but so be it. I think it'll be great. It'll be fun, entertaining. And I know we're all looking forward and we're all thankful that, you know, sports is back and, hopefully it'll be great, and we'll enjoy having it back, especially in 2020.
Sports is back. The Cleveland Browns might make the playoffs. And it's nice for a couple of weeks to have some football, basketball. Like, it's not normal, but it's a hint at normalcy. You know what I mean?
Yes, yes.
Was there a Christmas Day game as far as, like, matchup or how you played, or something that you guys did as a team with the Bulls that stands out? So I'm sure a lot of those games just mesh together and, you know, they're kind of forgettable. Was there one matchup or moment that stands out, either team or personally for you?
Those moments I remember required me to be very professional, especially when I played at home, because you wanted to eat, but you couldn't eat. You know, you wanted to
it was a test in willpower when you were playing.
Yeah, you wanted to hang out and open gifts and do that, but you couldn't.
Yeah.
You know, you had to be in the mindset, I got a game, I have to be prepared. And by the way, you're on television, so you don't want to get embarrassed. So the discipline that it took to play, and you know, Eric, you normally play at 7:30. It was a different routine when you play the afternoon games because there wasn't shoot around if you're playing at 12, 1 or 2 o'clock. So that means that you probably got to get up at 5:30, 6 in the morning, kind of get yourself going. You want to get a little breakfast. You know, you want to get to the arena. You want to warm up because the game is starting early. And the TV games has a different rhythm than a regular season game when you're not on national television. So, you know, there was a lot of focus that went into it. And I remember you didn't want to give anyone an advantage. You know, if we were playing, I can't remember who we were playing. I don't know if we were playing the Pistons or we're playing the New York Knicks or whoever we were playing. You wanted to maintain your competitive advantage. So, you know, unfortunately, it was just another day. But you had to be incredibly focused because you couldn't let the distractions of the holiday interfere with your business. So that's what I remember more than anything, is having to be incredibly focused because there was a game and all those games add up at the end of the year. Okay.
There you go.
And
there you go.
We were committed to one another. We were committed to the process. But, you know, it was, you know, I don't know if I'm supposed to say this or not, but Christmas was just another day when you're playing. And if you didn't look at it that way, you're probably going to get embarrassed. And I never wanted to be embarrassed. I wanted to be a professional at every level. And the holidays always required a little bit more or extra, if you will, to perform. And but you did what you had to do. And, you know, we got through it.
And you hit the buffet afterward, big time.
Well, I also remember getting on planes after the game because you had to go to the next city.
Oh, yeah.
So it was always
lucky if you get a to-go plate on the plane.
Always, you know, it was just the holidays from like Christmas to like January 2nd was always felt a little different.
Sure.
Because the hotels felt a little different. You know, most people weren't, you know, the traffic going to and from the games were always a little different. And then you had New Year's coming around. And that, you talk about one of the loneliest times in a hotel is during that time. Like you're in some city and you're just sitting there and what do you do? Right? What do you do? Or if you're at home, you're like, we probably got a game. And I remember what Phil Jackson would always do, which we always thought it was fun. He would always go bigs versus littles during the holiday. So our first practice back after the new year would always be the bigs versus the littles. And we would just, it wasn't a practice. He said, we're just going to have fun. And the bigs enjoyed it and the littles enjoyed it. I mean, I got a chance to live my dream. I got a chance to post up, you know, like Bill Cartwright and these guys, right? And that was always fun for me.
You're posting up the
bigs, right? You know, you got a chance to do something you would normally never get a chance to do. And the bigs love to play point guard and bring the ball up to court. And us little guys love to trap them and do things. So that was always fun for us. We always did that. That was like our tradition, what we did as a team, to kind of like whatever you did the night before, if you did anything at all, you just came there and you had fun the next day before you got back to your regular routine and business. So that was a fun thing that the coaches did for us there in Chicago for many years.
Good stuff. Good stuff. Great show today, my friend. A very happy holiday to you and the fam. Looking forward to getting your thoughts coming out of the Christmas Day games. And we'll pick this up next week. So special thanks, as always, to Mike Lieber, Bruce Bernstein, Tom Phillip, the entire Pure Hoops Media team. Be sure to check out the Mike Wise Show, dropping each and every Monday. Tuesday brings you Full Court Press. Pick up, Tom. 3, 2, 1. Be sure to check out the Mike Wise Show, dropping each and every Monday. Tuesday is Full Court with Fisher and Kay talking college hoops. Wednesday, Catch and Shoot 2.0 with Otto Strong and Aaron Berlin. Thursday, Buckets, Boards and Blocks with King McClure and Monica McNutt. And Friday, of course, the Pure Hoops Podcast with BJ Armstrong. And yours truly, Eric Newman. Have a great holiday weekend. Enjoy the games. Enjoy family, food. Stay safe, stay healthy, stay pure.
The Pure Hoops Podcast is a presentation of Pure Hoops Media.